PFT Media.
You are now listening to Cinema Crespediso.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street, and there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel built-in radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
The battle for the mind of North America will be fought in the video arena. The video drum. The television screen is the retina of the mind's eye. Therefore, the television screen is part of the physical structure of the brain. Therefore, whatever appears on the television screen emerges as raw experience for those who watch it.
We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be.
Cinema Crespediso.
What is up, peoples? Are we in the red? Check one, two. Should have done
check
that first.
Before. Should have done that beforehand. It's been a while, Chris. It's
been a while. Gotcha. I gotcha.
I really like.
I got you.
I don't want to say that ever because you say it all the time. It's awful. Chris, we're back.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. Welcome to episode 245 of Cinema Crespediso. I'm your host, Chris Crespo, chilling in the Crespediso studio with Drew Stacogman. Drew!
Chris!
I'm going to give you this one.
Chris! We survived! We made it! Almost exactly 1 week later, power was restored.
Yeah, what's...
Sunday at 9:30 is when we lost
it. What's 3 hours short of a week?
However, what's
3 hours short of 7 days?
However many hours that is, man. That is how long we were without power.
Man, oh man. Within a few hours of losing power, we recorded a bonus episode. Within a few hours of getting power back, we are recording episode 245 because I am uncommonly dedicated to my show and to my listeners. And poor Juicy Cogburn's getting sucked in its wake.
It happens.
Guys, I didn't forget how this goes. Here's your threat update. Prepare for your threat update incoming.
Threat update. Chartreuse. Irma was a bitch.
No.
No.
But yeah. you took my update.
Good enough.
Mine was better, but I got people being racist on Twitter.
Oh.
Drew, it's been a bad week.
It has. It's been an awful week.
Let's been an awful week, and... There we go. That's off. It's been an awful week, but we are here. We got power back. It's hot as fuck in here, and it stinks like cat pee. So, welcome. Welcome to Cinema Crespediso. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I still got the board.
It worked.
I still got the drop. Oh, shut that off. Yeah, man, it's been a shitty week. So, yeah. How was your week? Because I barely saw you.
I slept in a closet.
You did. You slept in a closet.
For a week.
I don't know if that's better or worse. I guess that's worse.
At least, I mean, I had a mattress in the closet.
Yeah, it's not like you were sleeping on the floor.
No.
And it's not like it was a closet full of shit, right?
No, it was a completely empty closet, actually. Mm-hmm. Full walk-in closet that could fit a twin mattress inside of it.
Yeah.
So it was like my own little room.
So yeah, a little Drew Cave.
Basically, I had a little Drew Cave for a week. So I had, you know, I could charge my phone, and I had air conditioning. Big ups to my pops for letting me stay there.
Thanks,
Padre.
Big ups to Cogburn Sr.
So, yeah, and luckily for me, really close to work, too. So I also went from losing 2 days of work,
yeah,
which should have been about 20 hours out of my paycheck,
right?
So then getting so much extra work, I probably, you know, should have only gotten like 25 to 30 hours. Instead, I clocked in 4 days. I worked 45 hours.
God damn.
So
God damn, that's a lot of work.
Yeah. Well, once we got power back, the fucking people just wanted the food.
That's what happens when you're in the food industry, vegan or not. People want that, man. They need them soy dogs.
Yeah, they want them soy dogs, them jackfruit sandwiches, and whatever the fuck. Seriously, the first day we only had 3 menu items.
You just snuck that burp in there like it was
The first day we only had 3 menu items, Chris. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And the plan was, so we'd start with these 3 because we could prep it up quick and get it ready to go.
Uh-huh.
And then we could start prepping other stuff.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, we sold out of all that shit after day one. So we... Day two, we were still, as if nothing had happened, we were still completely empty, completely screwed, completely fucked.
Back to where we were before.
People just kept coming in.
And people still wanted them foods.
It was, it was rough.
God damn, that's crazy.
It was rough.
Well, I've been dealing with the week of lost income for my 2 out of 3 jobs that pay me.
Yes.
And then my third job that doesn't pay me, my job, PFT Media, couldn't produce any content.
Nope.
Which doesn't help the not paying situation.
No, it does not.
Yeah, it sucks. And I was really worried that for the first time since when we started in January 2013 that we were going to go a weekend without having an episode of Cinema Crespity.
For the first time ever.
For the first time ever. I've gone on vacations and shit. There's still been episodes. Yeah. So here we are. We're doing an episode. It's going to be a shorter one because we also want to do a Mother spoiler bonus episode and get that out there. A lot of people have been talking about Mother, man.
Dude, it's fucking crazy.
It's a fucking crazy ass movie. I'm looking forward to talking about it in depth. That's good. That's gonna be the highlight of I'm not for sure, but like you give shout outs to Cogburn Senior.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta give shout outs, big ups to the Crespo clan for taking me in. They got power. They lost power for a little over 24 hours, 36 hours. Fortunately, I was with them at hour 36 when the power came back. I was like, all right, get my pillows.
I'm moving in.
And I effectively moved in for the week.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for them, I don't know what I'd do. I would be so much more miserable. It was bad enough just to be thrown off my schedule and to lose all that productivity. I still did add access to AC and television and internet. And, I still had so many amenities, fortunately. But I was still depressed.
Yeah. It happens.
It's weird.
Yeah.
That wasn't a joke on Facebook. Give me convenience or give me death.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I don't care. And, you're soft. I don't give a fuck. It's 2017.
Yeah.
We should be beyond this shit.
Unfortunately, we are not.
Maria's coming, man. You see Maria?
Yeah, I did. I did see Maria.
Oh, Puerto Rico. Oh. My island.
This might finally be the end of your island, Chris.
And you know what? You know what? As far as the U.S. government is concerned... They couldn't be happier if that island went underwater and everyone died. They would just
wipe their hands of it.
Oh, wow. That's not, one less thing we got to worry about. We ruined that little island nation, and now it's gone. And we're going to move on with our lives and take away health care for 30 million people across the country, and et cetera, et cetera.
Uh-huh. Yep.
I'm in a weird mood. I'm in a weird mood. So I apologize to everyone for this episode, but it's going to be a fuck one. The NFL is trash. It's the second week of the NFL.
Yep.
I just want to reiterate that. I think I may have to add... I want to add that to my end spiel.
The NFL's trash.
The NFL's trash. But I'm going to definitely say it up top. The NFL's trash. And a lot of friends I know, people that I love, SBK, Hurricane Bill. Motherfucking Hurricane Bill. Once they get things up and going again at the Words Hurt Studio, I think they're all half running. Pounding the Gap will be doing their second episode. They're going to be talking a lot about football. He loves football. He's a Patriots fan. Shout outs to Bill. I love Bill. He's a super nice guy.
Fuck the NFL.
Fuck the NFL. And it's like, I don't want to hate on people for still supporting it. Because it's a sport and they love it and it's an institution, blah, blah, blah. But so, and when you break it down, there are really so many terrible things about it. And I really want to do this entire episode. I want to do this whole episode about the NFL. 31 white rich owners making money off the backs of so many black athletes who the average career span of 3 years, over 80% of them end their careers broke. You know, only a handful of them actually get rich off it. Do I have to explain to people the concept of the house slave versus the field slave? That's your Marshawn Lynch's versus everyone else.
It's slavery all over again. Just a bunch of rich old white men who own a bunch of young, strong black men.
And the combine, when they measure their strength and their stamina, and then the draft where they bid on them.
I mean, it might as well just be the slave auction all over again.
It's a slave auction. It's a cleaned up slave auction. Everyone's like, but it's voluntary and they're making money, blah, blah, blah. But you can get work at the post office. You don't have to put yourself through that shit. You don't have to. Another thing, I've been thinking about this. I'm telling you, I'm in a weird mood. I've been thinking about this a lot this week. How I was talking to my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Where did I drop this? I'm distracted. I was talking to my brother about representation in film. And you know what? I'm not even sure if I pulled this story for the movie news segment, but we'll go ahead and talk about it now. The whole Hellboy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Ed Skrein. Skrein, S-K-R-E-I-N. How'd you say that?
Maybe Skrein?
Maybe.
Maybe.
Ed Skrein was cast as a Japanese character, or at least a half-Japanese character for Hellboy. He wasn't aware that the character was Japanese. After he was cast, the whole whitewashing uproar commences as it should. And this is why you do the uproar. Ed was like,
oh shit, I had no fucking idea.
What, this guy's Japanese? Looks into the source material. Oh fuck! People explain to him, this is fucked up. He's like, you're right! And as opposed to Matt Damon, Scarlett Johansson, Emma Stone, Tilda Swinton, who all make their excuses to keep their roles, Ed bowed out and said they need to appropriately cast this role. Side story, did you hear about the Hawaii, remember the Hawaii 50 story? We might not have talked about it on this show. I may have brought it up because of the racial component, because we don't watch fucking CBS.
No, I don't watch that fucking garbage.
It's a garbage television station. And Hawaii 50
is a garbage show, yeah.
But it's very popular. They're going through their 7th or 8th season, right?
Really?
Yeah. It's been going on for what? Scott Kahn.
Holy crap.
That's where Scott Kahn's been for like the last 6 or 7 years.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, CBS, man. The old people.
Good for them.
Daniel Day-Kim, I think that's his name, was on the show. He was one of the four main characters. It's two white guys, Asian dude, Asian lady. Okay. Show takes place in Hawaii, right? It should Asian people.
Well,
Asian descent, Hawaiians, Asian, you know what I mean?
At this point in time, and yeah, definitely.
The Guaylos are the
definitely
minority.
Definitely a bunch of Polynesians.
Polynesian, thank you.
But plenty of, I mean, in this day and age, unfortunately, 2017, plenty of white people on that fucking island.
They invaded. They're a parasite. Sorry, Jim. And Daniel Day-Kim, it was time for renegotiations for their contract, and him and his co-actress, the lady, they were getting shortchanged.
Okay.
And he was like, I want as much as the white guys, because I'm on the show as much, I have the same amount of dialogue. As a matter of fact, the white guys, like Scott Kahn and them, they actually negotiated less screen time. Like, we want to be on the show less.
But we want the same amount of money.
But we want the same amount of money. They got what they wanted. Daniel Day-Kim is like, I'm doing the same workload, I'm a popular character, I want the same amount of money they're getting. And they were like, well, here's a raise, but it's not the full amount. So he was like, you know what? I'm sticking to my guns. I'm dropping out of this hugely popular show. So right there, he's making a huge decision, right? Walking away from money because he felt like it was the moral thing to do, business ethics-wise. Why did I bring that up? Ed Skrein? Skrein? Is that what we decided?
Sure.
He left Hellboy. The producers going around looking for their replacement. Boom. Daniel Day-Kim.
Hey!
Perfect! It works out for everyone! Which is awesome. So it takes that. It takes people sticking to their guns, knowing when to say, I'm worth this much, and when they don't get it, walking away from even the considerable amount of money that we'd be getting. But it also takes what is called, they're called accomplices, mm-hmm. which is when Caucasians recognize, it's more than just being like, oh yeah, Black Lives Matter and wearing the shirt.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like going the extra mile and actively trying to affect social change. And when Ed Skrein did that, he was actively trying to affect social change and it worked. Dana DeKim got in there. That's why I'm supporting this guy. He's not even that great of an actor, but nope. I'm there for every movie he does now, man. I hope he doesn't do shit because I'm going to be supporting him. And I brought all that up because then I'm thinking about how Benjamin Pratt is my favorite example. One of my most favorite examples of, I bet you if you looked up his IMDb,
of all
the movies he's in.
It's all drug dealer,
Puerto Rican drug dealer, Cuban drug dealer, Dominican drug dealer.
For a while, he was a cop on Law & Order.
So does that balance it out?
No, it does not.
And it's, yeah, and so I first find out about the guy because he is on Law & Order. And, you know, that's cool, awesome. We have was he even playing the Puerto Rican on the show?
Oh, not only Puerto Rican, heavily Puerto Rican. Okay, like, yes. That was part of his
awesome
character.
So they made it, they weren't even trying to make him be Italian or ignore it.
He was Puerto Rican,
awesome.
Family man, Catholic,
and maybe,
the whole nine.
And maybe some of that stuff was like his input, and he got to get that mm-hmm. stuff in there with the grace of the Lord Dick Wolf, right? And, but then he makes his movie choices where he's constantly a fucking drug dealer. Every time he walks into a movie and he's a drug dealer, I die inside. Just I'm the house and mother. I die a little inside. And it goes all the way around. And all these people are like, I need work. I want to act. But the only roles I can get are Cholo number two
yeah.
in the beginning of Logan, where he cuts off a bunch of Mexicans' arms. Yeah. You know, and it's like... And then it comes back to me as a consumer, how complicit am I then to continue watching these kind of things? Like, you know, I enjoyed Doctor Strange, but there's still, but then there's a whole other Tibetan thing. Doctor Strange is a bad example. I enjoyed, anyway. Drew, I'm so tired.
Dude, it's just art. It's fine.
It's not just art, though, because it's representation, and it's the world. It's our reflection of the world, and it's coming back to us, so it's a feedback loop. And over years, as we see, when it's so dominated by certain paradigms and conventions and tropes, those things almost become like fact. It's perception. Perception is reality. It's the Matrix. So when every single Spanish person that... what's his name? Fucking Bubba in Mississippi... who's just watching garbage TV, every Hispanic person that he knows is via television and they're either maids or drug dealers.
Yeah.
It's a problem. It goes beyond just being art and it's a problem. So I don't even know where I'm going with that. The NFL's trash.
Mm-hmm.
People shouldn't support it, but if they do, I mean, go ahead. Support it if you do, but just know that, it, like Drew said, it's modern-day slavery. And if you think that's a stretch...
It's not.
Read The New Jim Crow by Michelle Alexander. I think I've said that before.
Mm-hmm.
I think I said it before. I think I should say it more often.
I mean, I've been saying that about the NFL for a very long time.
Yeah, that's another thing, though. The thing with both of us, and it's also the CTE and all that stuff, too. Mm-hmm. Just the aggro nature, the toxic masculinity that comes with that shit.
Oh, God, yeah, it's awful.
Yeah. The thing is, though, you and I recognize this. I was a football fan when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Fell out of it as I got older through high school, college. I didn't even watch sports in college. Got back into baseball and basketball after college. Football really lagged behind. Only started watching it because of fantasy football.
Mm.
I dropped out of fantasy sports a couple years ago because that shit's for babies, mm-hmm. and I'm a grown man. And so I'm barely a fan to begin with. Very easy for me to say, fuck that garbage.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're the same way.
Well, yeah, I'm not really a sports guy.
Right, so. You're not even a sports guy. Yeah, you're barely even a sports guy. Mm. So it's like, it's easy for us to say, fuck that garbage.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to people who we know who grew up watching it, they have memories of watching it with their parents, with their dad, playing it as they were a kid. That's mm-hmm. why they're mentally handicapped now because of all the blows they took when they were 12.
Mm-hmm.
And, I understand that. I understand that connection because that happens to me with other things as well. You love something. I love Mel Gibson growing up. I love Hulk Hogan growing up.
Both of them awful people.
The worst fucking people in the world. God damn it. Hashtag no more heroes. No more fucking heroes.
Awful people.
Having heroes is the worst thing you can do because the only thing they will do is let you down. I honestly hope no one listening to this, we're not heroes for anyone listening because we all let you down so hard.
Oh, I've already let you down by me being your hero. You've already been let down. Congratulations.
Oh, God.
Step one, I let you down. Yes.
Oh, my God. What's going on? All right.
So, top five?
No, first, Drew, before we do the top five, we got to...
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Pick of the Week.
Picks of the Week.
Pick of the Week.
Pick of the Week.
Cinema Crespediso streaming.
That's right, Cinema Crespediso streaming Pick of the Week, week. Every week we do this. We don't have a guest this week because of Hurricane Irma, but things will be back to normal next week. We rearranged, we rescheduled, we're good to go. But right now it's just Drew and I, and I'm sure Drew is ready to do the thing where he fucks with me.
Mm-hmm. Chris, this movie. Oh, there's nobody here. This is great, fantastic. Hang on, I gotta redo this. Hang on a second. It's gonna be a second. Because it's on, yeah, you see. Oh, God damn it.
All right, Drew is... Drew's freaking out over there.
All right, so, Chris, this movie is an out from 1984. It is... Come on, give me a fucking rating on this stupid-ass website. I don't know what it is rated.
Oh, because you're using the Just Watch website? Yeah. Because before you were using Netflix, it was much easier for you to navigate. Yeah, for people who don't know, Drew uses JustWatch.com because we load up the randomizer once every 6 weeks, and then things come up and off all of these different streaming services. So Drew goes to JustWatch.com every week when we do the pick to make sure it's still available on services, what other services it's on, and in this case, he's looking for more information, which we haven't done very recently because we've had so many guests.
Exactly. So it's from 1994. It's an hour and 36 minutes long. I don't know what it's rated, but it is a genre. From the genres, is it's comedy and crime, Chris. 90 minutes.
Okay. Not too many of those. Comedy, crime, 90 minutes. And what was the year? 2000?
No, 1984.
90-minute comedy from 1984. It's like Police Academy.
There you go.
Yeah?
Yeah.
There you go. Crime. That's funny. That's crime. Crime. Ain't no crime.
Police.
I mean, barely.
Crime.
Barely.
Get it?
Oh, what's it on? What's Police Academy on?
Netflix.
Okay, awesome. Police Academy on Netflix. Police Academy is one of those movies, Drew, where it's like... some people would call it a guilty pleasure. I don't believe in guilty pleasures.
Yeah.
I just believe
it's
in
pleasure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not a great movie in terms of craft.
It has
technique.
It has its place in the comedy lexicon, Chris.
Man.
It is. There. Goddamn. How many fucking sequels did this movie have?
Seven. It went up to the seventh one. The seventh one was Mission to Moscow, which was. It was a weird thing where the sixth one came out in, like, the late 80s, and then the seventh one came out in, like, 97, and was direct-to-video, which was sad. The first one, it was also made when Steve Guttenberg was really popping.
Yeah, the Goot.
The Goot was loose, and he was making things happen for quite a while there in the 80s, and Police Academy was one of those things. Michael Winslow, who lives here in town, I'm gonna reach out. I'm going to try to get the guy on the show. But the thing is, I want Michael Winslow on the show, but then he's also going to sit there, Drew, and just make noises for literally an hour and a half, and then we're going to have to try to do the show around that. I've heard him do interviews. That's the way it goes.
Yep.
So... it'll be a challenge, but it also, you know, it helps the credit of the show. So, he's great. Bubba Smith, the football player, the NFL's trash, is on there. He's fucking fantastic as Hightower. I can't remember his name, but the guy who plays the evil dick cop who wants everything shut down.
The captain. G.W. Bailey.
He is such a great movie asshole.
Yes,
he is. So... good at making you be like, that guy sucks, you know? He nails it. He's fantastic. Police Academy. Who is this for? As the pick, I guess this pick is for some of our younger listeners who maybe know of the Police Academy movies as these things, and maybe they never really even watched them. And I would say, like, go back and watch this first one. Also recognize the first one is the only R-rated one.
Yes.
The rest are all PG, which is insane. Can you imagine doing that with any other movie franchise, Drew? Imagine if The Hangover came out, was rated R, and then Hangover 2 and 3 were both PG.
Yeah, I know, right?
It'd be crazy.
Well, I mean, They did a lot of weird shit in this movie, Chris. I mean, there's the gay biker bar.
Well, the gay biker bar, the Blue Oyster, pops up in almost every one. It's a running joke. Yeah. A weird bit of homophobia, in which that's a bit of Police Academy that doesn't age well. Yeah. And that's going to happen with these movies. You have to view them through the context of time. Now, do we throw out the baby with the bathwater? In this case, I say no. You can recognize that that joke doesn't age well, and where it comes from that time period. You can also maybe flip it a bit, and maybe it's a progressive joke where it is the bad guys. They're the uppity white dudes, uber straight, and maybe they need to be slapped around a bit by some leather bears. A bunch of leather bears.
I mean, yeah, they all just look like Rob Halford.
Oh, they all look like Rob Halford and Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. Freddie Mercury went to a Terminator dress-up party, and they tango. They tango in every one.
Yeah.
That's a weird running joke.
Hilarious.
It's a fun, fun movie. I think it's a good time. And in this horrible day and age where so many things are terrible, just kick back and watch a dumb movie like The Police Academy. You can enjoy dumb movies sometimes. And you know what? It might not be for everyone. I don't know. If you haven't seen Police Academy...
See, it's a comedy thing, too. So that's very true. Subjective.
That's very true as well.
And it's a comedy of the time, so it's an 80s comedy.
Yeah.
So there's going to be the rampant racism and sexism. Yeah. I mean, the hot cop...
The hot cop with the big old hoots.
Yeah, I mean,
not Mahoney. Mahoney is Gutenberg.
That is ridiculous.
Hightower is Bubba Smith.
That whole character is just ridiculous.
It is, yeah. And then what's ridiculous... But then it's another, maybe there is a bit of a flip there. She practically rapes a dude.
I mean, yeah, and she totally owns it.
And then the guy just stumbles back to his dorm.
Like, oh my God, I cannot, what the fuck? And like, she's yeah.
Like, I thought I was a Casanova, but my world got turned upside down. It's a crazy movie, people. Check it out. I think it's the same one. That's the thing. Another thing is some of the jokes run together. I'm almost positive the first one is where... Mahoney walks by a room and he hears Jonesy playing the video game, right? And then he peeps into the room and Jones is sitting in front of a TV that is off.
Yep, he's just
and he's
doing
making
his thing.
The sounds and doing it. He's just like, "What the fuck?" And then walks away. Police Academy streaming pick of the week on Netflix. Fantastic, Drew. Let's get into that top five.
Chris, top five starts at number five this week. Surprisingly enough.
All right.
No, number five, The Hitman's Bodyguard. Made an additional $3.5 million, total of 70.
I saw the last 30 or 40 minutes of this movie yesterday.
Okay.
Because my dad's got that Cody box, because mm-hmm. he doesn't believe in...
paying for anything.
In federal copyright laws.
Screw that.
Man, I was at the Redinger's...
Nobody cares about...
antique flea market up there in Apopka. You ever been there?
Nope.
It's pretty big. It's pretty cool. And when the weather's cooler out, it might be worth going out there. And one guy set up big signs and everything, TV, fire stick, stop, cut your cable and satellite, stream old and new movies, TV shows, blah, blah, just straight up mm-hmm. like, fuck, federal felony, copyright, yep. I can't believe it.
Nobody cares.
I couldn't believe it.
Believe
it
me, Chris.
It was right next to the stand with all the Confederate flags and the Trump hats, mm-hmm. and I almost burned the whole place down right there. So I saw the last, 40 minutes of this movie. And I had some laughs. I had some chuckles. It was from watching the trailer. I enjoyed it just as much as I enjoyed watching the trailer. And then I was like, this is okay. And it was. It was okay. There were some parts where I couldn't not laugh. The action was whatever. Pretty pedestrian. Although there was one car stunt that I was pretty impressed with.
Okay.
Towards the end there. But even just watching the last 40 minutes, I got the gist of what the movie was about, what was going on.
Oh, yeah,
it's very...
Yeah, if you saw the trailer, you saw the movie.
But there's also this other part about Ryan Reynolds' character likes this girl, and but they're not together anymore. Like, she's one of the attorneys or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's so funny how you can watch a second half of the movie and be like, oh, I understand what happened in the first half. but it's okay, though. And I would say from watching it, the worst part of the movie are the musical choices. The all the needle drops. They're just like the most mainstream bullshit. Not daring or interesting at all.
No.
But I have a feeling that's a movie as a whole. But it was okay. It was fine enough.
Sure.
It was fine enough. I'm looking forward to finally streaming it so I can see that first half.
I'm really looking forward to never watching a single second of that movie.
I'm not saying, from what I saw, I'm not being like, oh no, you should.
Yeah,
No.
I got better things to do with my time.
You do. Mm-hmm. No, that's debatable, but I ain't going to get into that right now.
Number four this week, Home Again. Weekend gross, $5.3 million. Total 17.
17. I thought this would have done a little better after a couple weeks, to be honest. I thought Reese Witherspoon had a little more pull, as well as, well, you know, it's really not Nancy Myers, it's her daughter. So maybe our audience is that savvy? I don't think they are. Go on.
Number three this week, Mother, made $7.5 million.
So, $7.5 million opening there is testament to how Jennifer Lawrence can open... marketing wise, I'm speaking from a purely marketing point of view. 7.5 million reflects Jennifer Lawrence star power times the genre perception, which is, from what I was seeing, it looked like it was going to be intense thriller
horror
slash
almost.
Horror. Yeah, they were selling it as a horror film. It gets horrific.
I mean, yeah.
I wouldn't call it a horror film.
Not in any way, shape, or form.
As a matter of fact, when I was telling my parents about it, I was like, I'm going to go see this movie. My dad was like, well, I like it. It's like, I don't know, because it's supposed to be like a pretty intense horror movie. Then when I came back, he's like, was it scary? I was like, actually, no. Not even the slightest. It was intense.
Oh, yeah.
Very intense, but not scary.
No.
Confusing.
Yeah, a little bit.
Until you know what's going on.
And... until you put the pieces together and it's like, oh, I fucking get it now.
And then when you get it.
And then after that, and then like I was telling you off mic, I had a problem with watching the rest of the movie because I was so focused
trying
on
to think about what's
trying to think
back.
About what had already happened to make it all work, because obviously it does.
Okay, so here's the thing with Mother. It's a very unique situation because we are in this spoiler phobic time, and I do also want to respect that because, but then... there are benefits to going into a movie blind.
Mm-hmm.
Often, I think it's good to go into a movie blind, not knowing anything, because then the movie can surprise you. But then there are certain times when maybe you do need to be prepared a little bit before you go into a movie, just to know what to expect. And I think it helps for people to know that they need to have a sense of allegory when they go into this film.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, the whole fucking movie is a giant one, so...
a giant allegory.
So,
a
yeah.
giant allegory.
I mean, the whole, from start to finish... I mean, it's all... I mean, yeah, it's about, you know, Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem, and they live in this house, and you know, old man, young woman, couple, blah, 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 blah. Weirdos come in, all sorts of crazy shit happens, but it's...
Well, okay, so you just... Okay, well, first off, what I was going to say is we're not going to get into now what the movie is necessarily about.
Yeah.
Because that would be a spoiler.
Correct.
We are going to do a spoiler-filled episode where we talk about the movie in depth, and we're going to break down those things and try to remember as many clues as we can.
Mm-hmm.
So don't expect too many details in this conversation. Now,
But all that you get in the trailer.
But all that you get in the trailer. The movie does begin with a couple. They're in a house, and it's a chamber drama.
Yeah.
There's a weird tension between them. He's a poet who has writer's block. She's trying to fix up the house. She's literally a homemaker.
Yeah.
And then a stranger shows up in the middle of the night. Causes tension. His wife shows up the next day.
Even more tension
increases. We are permanently throughout the entire movie with Jennifer Lawrence's character.
Yeah.
The camera never leaves her.
Nope.
So we're in her POV, her perspective. When it comes to filmmakers, they should, and people listening to the show now who want to make movies, they should watch this and pay attention to the concept of perspective and POV.
Oh, yeah.
This and Shutter Island are two movies that if you watch them back to back, you really understand how character POV informs a film and how camera placement and camera movement helps get that across. The first 30, 40 minutes of the movie is just character drama.
Yeah,
a tense weird one with flashes of weirdness.
Oh, well, yeah, little flashes of weirdness.
Little bitty flashes of weirdness.
That all makes sense at the end.
A strange organ in the toilet, but yeah. But then it goes away, and then it goes back to just, you know, Michelle Pfeiffer being amazing, Ed Harris being great.
Awesome.
All the actors are
Everybody's
great.
Fantastic.
Everyone's great.
Domhnall.
Domhnall shows
Gleason.
Up. Domhnall shows up for 7 minutes and owns the movie.
It's just like, oh, you motherfucker.
He's so
How
good.
Can you do this?
Yeah, just keep showing up. I'm going to show up in an Aronofsky movie. Fuck
you! You were just in Star Wars, you dick.
You're supposed to be honest now.
I hate you. I hate you so much.
He's so good.
It's a crazy character drama, chamber drama. It's a family drama. It's also a bit of a farce, a relationship farce.
Yeah.
You know, like Michelle Pfeiffer's character, the drunkenness and all that shit.
Yeah.
And there are times when it's like, this is so awkward, it's hysterical.
It is. But
the yellow panties and stuff.
But at the same time, since we're from Jennifer Lawrence's perspective.
Yes.
She seems to be the only one who thinks it's awkward.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody else is just going along with it. And you and her were all just like, what the fuck?
100%. Well, her confusion is our confusion. We as an audience have the benefit of being able to sit back and analyze the entire scene. We're not in her head. Mm-hmm. So as a character, she's like, I really have no idea what's going on. And I mean, we could talk about the setup, but then after that, it's like you really need to see the movie. Go in it knowing that it's not literal.
No.
So this movie has an F cinema score.
Okay.
Cinema score is when we walk out of movies and there's those annoying 20-year-olds dressed all in black with the clipboards that scream at us for our opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to scream back at them.
Listen to my podcast.
Not even that. Not even that, yeah. You think I'm going to give you my opinion for free? I give it for free on the podcast.
Yeah. No, I give it away for downloads, damn it.
Downloads, yeah. For data. For measurable data. I want to say, like, listen, it took anywhere from a year to 2 years to three, 4 years, who knows, to make this movie. Anywhere from $1 million to $250 million. Anywhere from dozens to hundreds. Well, this one, 30. I'm saying movies in general. This movie could have taken anywhere from dozens to hundreds of people to make X amount of time. It just took me 90, 123, 180 minutes to watch this thing. I just walked out of the theater. The movie finished 10 seconds ago. And you want my fucking opinion? Fuck you.
Damn, Chris, you are in a weird mood. Got all this tension. But Chris, not everyone like you and I takes their time to think about their opinion.
No, that's true.
Give an informed and respectable opinion.
That is true. People see something.
That movie was shit.
That is true.
Or I really liked it.
That's true. I thought it was great. I thought it was shit.
Why was it great?
Because I've walked out of movies and been like, I enjoyed it. That was great. And then like a week later, I'm like, man,
God, that movie sucked.
That sucked. Yeah. Why did I like it? And then first time I saw Big Lebowski, I didn't like it.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. It's the Big Lebowski. I went to Lebowski Fest. It's one of my favorite movies, you know? So opinions change. I am interested. So, Blade Runner. We got Blade Runner 2049 coming out, tracking out like a $40 million opening weekend. Which is a success. That's a success for a Ryan Gosling starring R-rated sci-fi 2.5-hour movie.
Uh-huh.
Sequel to a critically commercially failure of a film.
That turned out to be like the benchmark of fucking science fiction.
That's the thing. It got the reappraisal, right? And now down the line, people are like, I love this movie. I guarantee you, though, there are still people who saw it in that initial screening.
Yeah, that are still like...
A bunch of six-year-olds.
That movie was shit.
That movie was shit. I didn't like it then. I don't like it now. I'm like, all right, whatever. It's your opinion. I think Mother's going to go that route.
Yeah.
I think it's going to go that route. Because it has an F cinema score. And the cinema score is those people that take those opinions, they report back, they send it to this company, and they report this is the word of mouth. And F is notorious.
I mean, I could understand why a very large portion of this country would not like this movie.
Yes, because...
For various
reasons.
Various large swatches of the country will not like this movie for a whole slew of different reasons.
Yes. I can think of... Yes.
At least
two different specific reasons that Red America would not like this movie. And I can also think of very specific reasons why, quote, blue America wouldn't it either.
Yeah.
Or why America in general. I do think a majority of people who went in there and didn't like it and gave it that F score. For example, our homie, two watches at a time, so you know what time it is.
How many
Anthony Black Hasselhoff Davis, he didn't give it no sleeps. He gave it the trash rating. He said this movie is pure trash. No one wasted your time to see this. He was shitting on it so hard on Facebook.
He didn't get it.
Which, yeah, he doesn't get it, because I just have a feeling, and I love the guy. He's a great dude. Fine. He's a lot of fun. We have him on the show whenever we can. We just had him on a few weeks ago. A blast. He's awesome. I like talking to him. But, you know, I think he just maybe went into it with expecting a literal film. And I think that's what a lot of the negative reaction is coming from. When you don't get that, just here's a linear, literal story. A, B, C happens.
D, happy ending. Yes, there's the end. Credits.
Happy ending or sad ending, as long as it just makes a linear sense to them. It's something that they've seen before.
Roll credits.
Mother is something you haven't seen before. Mother is... Without giving things away, it's Roman Polanski meets Luis Buñuel meets fucking, like I said, a chamber drama, you know, character drama. Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? It's insane the amount of
influences
that are in there.
Seriously, you know what this movie is? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is every Aronofsky movie that all wrapped into one.
Kind of condensed. Yeah, he is condensing a lot of things.
It does. I mean, we've got The Fountain. Fucking Requiem's in there. There's some fucking Black Swan bullshit.
There's some...
The Wrestler. I mean...
Noah.
Noah. Oh, dude. It's all in there. Dude, between The Fountain and Noah, that's like half the movie.
It's all in there.
I mean, it's and everything else. It's an amount... It is everything.
But in the trappings of what seems like such a small movie in scope...
It's so big!
But then it gets so big!
No,
it gets so big so fast!
Chris, it is... It is one of the smallest, tightest dramas that is also, like, the largest, most all-encompassing thing that I've ever...
It's crazy.
It hits it all.
It's fucking wild. And
every single mark, it hits. And it's for me, it's one of those movies that it's like a key going into a lock. Either the movie's unlocked and you fucking
and it clicks for you, yeah, sure.
And you get it,
yep.
Or you don't. And if you don't get it, I can understand why you see the movie's garbage.
I do think then we are the type of audience that Aronofsky is sort of making the movie for, in that we have knowledge of his work and also knowledge of the other things that he does that he's thrown in there, so we know what he's pulling from, so we can pull from the same database. Mm-hmm.
Well,
and so then when his movie does punch you in the mouth, we're like, oh,
I'm ready for it.
We're like, oh, shit, I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah.
When other people get punched in the mouth, they want to punch back.
No, exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So that's why when we walk out of the movie, hear a lot of, I don't mean. A lot of groaning and mumbling in that movie.
I was smiling on my way out of that movie. I was like,
I couldn't believe it. I was like,
really?
I couldn't believe it.
Really?
So, in interest of time, let's just, obviously, you and I enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
How do we recommend it, though? Can we recommend it?
It's
for a specific audience.
Okay, so here's the thing. If you're familiar with Aronofsky and his work, I have a feeling you'll enjoy it. It might not be as visually stimulating as you're used to.
If you're looking for Aronofsky, yes.
It might not be, but
there's still touches of it.
Oh, dude, that fucking every time. Well,
okay, I will say
every time she puts that yellow stuff in her fucking water,
there's that touch of beep.
Dude, it's the fountain. That's the fountain effect. Sped up and tiny in glass.
Yeah, I was like, oh, look, he found a way to work his macro photography into there. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Exactly.
Anytime you can work that in there, I'm all for it, man. It looks
so
beautiful.
So, you know, there's the little touches like that.
Yeah.
But, you know,
Yeah, it's a tough one to necessarily recommend to people.
If you're a philosophy or theology buff, by all means.
Philosophy and theology majors, film school majors who don't have your heads up your ass, and...
Or even if you... Actually, you know what? Some of the ones who have their heads up their ass will really enjoy this one, too. Because... Maybe. Why? Because nobody else likes it, and I do.
Maybe. F-Cinema Score. Aronofsky should wear that F-Cinema Score as a badge of honor. I saw someone tweet that, and I was like, yeah, you should.
Yeah, he
because,
should.
Because a person is smart, but people are dumb.
They are.
And audiences are dumb. And here's a classic example of someone giving us something different. Exquisitely well made. Super well made. So Anthony Davis says it's trash, he means it's trash as in the movie is garbage. Technically speaking, the movie is kind of art house trash.
Yeah.
But it's trash in a different way. In the grindhouse sort of way. It's like, what if Aronofsky and Tarantino collaborate on a movie? You may end up with something sort of like this. When he says it's trash, he means it's complete garbage, and that's not true because it is technically extremely well made.
Beautiful,
well acted. There are just things going on in that movie that we literally haven't seen done in a mainstream movie ever.
I didn't think Jennifer Lawrence actually had the acting chops to pull this shit off.
Really? You haven't believed in Lawrence up until now?
No.
Did you ever see Winter's Bone?
You see, no. I never saw that.
That's the one that launched her at 16, yeah. And she got an Academy Award nomination for that. Maybe watch it. Maybe watch it.
Because that may
be the best thing she's done. That and Mother may be the two best things she's done so far. Yeah. You haven't seen Joy either, have you?
No.
She's pretty good in Joy. I really like Joy. That's another David O. Russell joint. That one was...
She was good in Silver Linings Playbook, but still, it wasn't...
But that wasn't as big of a performance. It was an okay character. That was more of a vehicle for Bradley Cooper's character.
Exactly.
David O. Russell put more emphasis on him and his relationship with... his father, Robert De Niro's character, mm-hmm. Jennifer Lawrence was like the side chick, right? Yeah. As opposed to this, where it's Mother, it's her. It's
Jennifer Lawrence movie.
It's on her shoulders. Yeah. And it's even a thankless role in terms of she's a reactive character up until the very, very, very end.
Well, of course it's a thankless role. I mean...
Everyone else around her gets to have all the fun, and she has to be the bewildered, blank, innocent person that gets, you know, and it's... Man, she nails it.
Fucking phenomenal.
She nails it. You know her and Aronofsky are now an item?
Of course.
Based on this movie?
Of course.
They hooked up on this movie and now they're a thing.
Makes sense.
In terms of the movie too, the dynamic.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in spoilers. there you go. That's our spoiler-free review. If you want to hear us really get into it, we're going to do a spoiler-filled review and it's going to be absurd. So let's crank out the rest of the half of the show.
Number two, American Assassin made $14.8 million. $14.8 million for American Assassin.
Mm-hmm. I wonder... Don't be surprised if this movie is funded partially by the CIA.
Wouldn't be surprised at all.
Not. Don't be surprised at all. That's not even a joke.
No.
That's not a joke.
They got to make money somehow.
It's not even... CIA?
Nah.
No, it's not about making money. It's about presenting terrorism as a threat that needs to be, that's always in our face. And,
well, yeah. I mean,
and how intelligent... You know, it's like Zero Dark Thirty. The reason why Catherine Bigelow and Mark Ball got such CIA access is because then they then made a movie that... posit the idea that we only got Bin Laden because of the evidence we got through torture, etc. Yeah. Which so many people have come out and said that doesn't work. That's not the case. Blah blah blah. But they literally for Zero Dark Thirty, they were literally in working with the CIA. Everyone knew that they were working. There was even a government investigation into how much they were working together.
I think one of the best lines about torture was actually in a video game, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
Grand Theft Auto 5, you actually have to torture somebody.
Yeah.
And Trevor Phillips, one of the characters in it, goes off on it. He's like, listen, torturing isn't about getting reliable information. If I wanted that, I'd go here. This is about me and having fun.
That's funny. That's true. Yeah, it's for sadists.
Yeah.
It's for sadists.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
You don't get reliable information from torture.
It's an excuse to fuck people up.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So, America.
Number one, of course, with another $60 million this week, It. After 2 weeks, has a total gross in America of $218 million.
God damn!
Also, 152 foreign worldwide, 371.
That worldwide number is going to be interesting because American Horror doesn't translate worldwide the same way as like your Star Warses and your Marvels, etc. So it's interesting that it's already at that number. A $60 million, Drew, get this stat. We really didn't talk about this last week because it was obvious.
Yeah.
But at over $100 million last weekend, what was it, like 115, something stupid like that. Yeah. Because we did the show on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
So we only got the Friday estimates. We did the show on Saturday with Rocky, so we had the Friday estimates. We didn't have the final number from last week. It was over $100 million, even with all this shit going down in the Southeast with the storm and then the shit in Houston. So its opening weekend was by far the biggest opening weekend ever for September.
Yeah.
It is the first movie ever in which its second weekend would have also beat the record for September.
Really?
Yes. Because the previous highest September opening was like, I think, $50 million, and the movie's escaping me right now.
Yeah.
So at $60 million,
it still would have been number one.
Which is like, come on. This is actually something that I like, and it's been happening more lately. Star Wars in December, It now in September, Deadpool in February, Guardians of the Galaxy in August a couple years ago. audiences are proving that when, and I do say audiences are stupid, and they are, but we're also proving that when you give us good movies, it doesn't matter the time of the year or when you put it out, if the marketing is good and the movie is good,
we're gonna go see it,
it's gonna make a shit ton of money. And you don't have to jumble everything together first fucking week of May. You don't have to ignore February because you think, or January. January is such a dead month for movies because they're like, oh, no one's going to see them. Just put out good movies.
And we'll go see them.
Like, no, this is our month for bad movies. No, stop making bad movies. So, yeah, good for it. Good for it. You know who's obsessed with It and Pennywise?
Who?
Our homie Simon Tang.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. So we're going to have him back on soon so we can get his official It review. But spoiler alert, he loved it. Let's get into the new movies on DVD. The Bad Batch. Anna Lily Amirpour.
Yeah.
Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
It was supposed to be not that great.
It has a Metacritic score of like 61, 62. So
it's not a bad
score. It's actually a score that's kind of similar to Mother's Metacritic score.
I have to at least give it a chance.
Based on A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, and based on the fact it's her second movie, it's a cannibal movie with Jason Momoa, Jim Carrey's in there somewhere.
No.
I want to see it. I saw her tweet. I follow her on Twitter that it's going to be on Netflix.
Okay, sweet.
So we'll get our chance. Another movie I wanted to see that apparently is great, The Big Sick finally comes out.
I'm looking
forward to seeing that one. Kumail Nanjiani and Emily Gordon's rom-com. And this little movie called Wonder Woman comes out on DVD on Tuesday.
Who's in that? What's it about?
I don't know. Some no name, some character no one's ever heard of. I don't even know why they bother making these things.
Yeah, seriously.
You know what's funny? They keep showing in the... No one buys discs anymore. They keep showing the Blu-ray commercial for Wonder Woman. Yeah. Like, with the scene not shown in the movie, blah, blah, blah. Like, one additional scene because the script was the movie. They nailed the production so well that they don't have a, quote, director's cut. What they set out to make is what they made. And they're like, we have no extra, nothing else to give you.
That's fine.
Here's one scene of her beating up a couple people in a bar.
I don't need any more.
I know. We don't need any more. I would have liked the better villain.
Yeah,
the weakest part of the movie is the Ares thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But otherwise, it's a great movie. What's going on in theaters?
In theaters, Kingsman: The Golden Circle.
Awesome. Looking forward to it. Looks like a lot of fun. That Red Band trailer was pretty great.
Yes, it was.
I like when he goes, it's very American. And Channing Tatum's like, fuck yeah.
Of course, yeah. America, fuck yeah. These guys know what they're doing.
Matthew Vaughn's good.
Also, the Lego Ninjago movie.
Which is like, okay, I was on board for the Lego movie. I was on board for Lego Batman.
Yep.
I'm out.
Yeah, seriously.
I'm out. You can't just make Lego movies and expect people to show up.
I mean, maybe when it's on Netflix, you know, at least I'll probably give it a shot.
Based on the reviews.
Yes.
Based on the reviews.
And some awful piece of shit called The Battle of the Sexes.
Battle of the Sexes is a limited release movie. Actually, Drew, I wasn't too interested in this until I saw this morning on CBS. CBS Morning News? No, CBS. What is it called? Sunday? What's their Sunday morning program? Fuck.
I don't know
why I'm blanking on it. They did two things this morning on movies. They did a great Jake Gyllenhaal interview and profile that I would recommend people checking out. That was great. And they did a bit on Billie Jean King, the tennis player who played this chauvinistic guy who said
Bobby Riggs,
who said he was putting the show back in chauvinism.
Yeah.
And he really believed all that shit. But the funny thing is, Billie Jean King was a fan of his, and she like just thought it was all hysterical. Like, this guy's such a goofball. All this chauvinistic shit is so stupid that she couldn't help but find it endearing, which makes me like her so much more. And the movie is about their setup battle of the sexes tennis match where she trounced him in three sets.
But he was
also like an 80-year-old man or something.
Yeah, well, he was an ex-champ. He was at that point in time, he was more of a showman than anything else. Yes. He was just trying to make some fucking money, and it worked.
And it worked for everyone involved. But then, like, they showed some clips from the movie, and the way it actually looks like it may be a pretty decently made movie. And it's a limited release for this. As well as this other movie, Stronger, speaking of Jake Gyllenhaal. It's another limited release movie.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, it's a little further down the list.
David Gordon Green, too. Huh.
It's a David Gordon Green movie? See, I didn't even know that. They didn't point that out in the Jake Gyllenhaal thing. Now, that's why I really want to see it, because I love David Gordon Green. I really like it when he tackles dramas and stuff, character films. But this is based on a real life story of a dude who was, it's a Boston Marathon bombing movie.
Oh, damn it.
But he was waiting at the finish line for his wife or girlfriend. So he was right there, yeah. And he lost both of his legs. So the movie is about his recovery and learning to live, you know, with
no legs.
With no legs.
I have no legs.
I have no legs. Ching. But it's Jake Gyllenhaal. He's great. I am officially like a fan. I like David Gordon Green. I think it's worth it. I think it'd be worth checking out.
Word up.
Maybe not in theaters. I ain't getting around to go see it in theater, but I'm going to check it out eventually. And if Battle of the Sexes is reviewed well, I'm going to see that too. But otherwise, there you go. I mean, plenty of options as we're getting closer to October. All right, Jer.
You must be Doc Holliday.
Well, that's the rumor.
Dr. Strangelove, do we have anything like that in the works?
They call me Dr. Manhattan.
And Bridget Fonda.
Do doctors know more about sex?
Doc Hollywood.
That's right, the Dr. Drew is here for your prescription for life. Dr. Drew, take it away.
I just want to sleep in my own bed tonight, Chris. The doctor is out.
Sleeping in his own... It takes me longer to write it. I'm going to say it. Bad. The doctor is out. All right, guys. We're going to take a quick break here. I wanted to play you a song from the Mother soundtrack, but there is none.
Ha!
So here is a song that I heard a few times this week, and I love it. It's on the radio. I think it's supposed to be a newer song, and it's a hit. It's a Spanish radio hit. It's called Yo No Sé Mañana by Luis Enrique. Enjoy this. Get sexy with it. If you don't like the song, you're probably a passionless, soulless, dead monster who might as well just fucking bite a bullet. So enjoy.
Yo no sé si tú, no sé si yo seguiremos siendo como hoy. No sé si después de amanecer vamos a sentir la misma sed. ¿Para qué pensar y suponer? No preguntes cosas que no sé. Yo no sé. No sé dónde vamos a parar. Eso ya la piel nos lo dirá. ¿Para qué jurar y prometer algo que no está en nuestro poder? Yo no sé lo que es eterno, no me pidas algo que es del tiempo. Yo no sé mañana, yo no sé mañana, si estaremos juntos, si se acaba el mundo. Yo no sé si soy para ti, si serás para mí, si lleguemos a amarnos, odiarnos. Yo no sé mañana. Pasamos al sofá, de un botón a todo lo demás. No pusimos reglas ni reloj, aquí estamos solos tú y yo. Todo lo que ves es lo que soy, no me pidas más de lo que doy. No, yo no sé mañana, yo no sé mañana, si estaré.
What's up, it's your boy Stone the Terrible, aka your girl topped me off, y'all start kissing right after I dropped her off. Forget that, yo, radio. For all your movie news and reviews, check out Cinema Crespediso. Let's get it.
We're adding a little something to this month's sales contest. As you all know, first prize is a Cadillac Eldorado. Anybody want to see second prize? Second prize, a set of steak knives. Third prize is you're fired. You get the picture? You laughing now? You got leads. Mitch and Murray paid good money. Get their names to sell them. You can't close the leads you're given. You can't close shit. You are shit. Hit the bricks, pal, and beat it, because you are going out.
The leads are weak.
The leads are weak. Fucking leads are weak. You're weak. I've been in this business 15 years.
What's your name?
Fuck you. That's my name. You know why, mister? Because you drove a Hyundai to get here tonight. I drove an $80,000 BMW. That's my name.
Welcome to the Crespo Show.
Oh, I got the wrong board up. That's just my, on this board, that's my go-to job for this one. Everything else is very intro specific. Guys, welcome back to episode 245 of Cinema Crespediso, one of our rare guest-less episodes. We had a guest scheduled for this weekend, but due to Hurricane Irma and not knowing if we would even have power back, let alone by what time, that guest has been rescheduled for this upcoming Sunday. And then the guest we rescheduled last week will be here the following Sunday. So finally, things will be getting back into some sort of order.
Assuming we don't get hit by another hurricane.
Maria, 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 remind me of a West Side Story. Hope you guys enjoyed that Luis Enrique song, Yo No Soy Mañana, which means I don't know tomorrow. I guess I don't know about tomorrow.
Who knows what tomorrow's going to bring, bro?
Hurricane Maria.
Perhaps.
Where can people find you online?
At Antihero 419, all over the internet. Oh! By the way, the Xbox has been risen from the grave, Chris.
So it was the battery pack and not the surge protector thingy?
Whatever.
The power source?
Whatever. Chris, I did nothing.
Wait, you didn't even change it.
I did nothing.
It's working again. We thought Hurricane Irma killed it.
It was dead. I accidentally hit the button as I was messing with the internet and it turned on and I was like, oh my god, what the fuck's going on here? The Xbox relationship here. So you can find me on Xbox Live now. Again, I'm back.
Back on Xbox Live. What multiplayer online games are you playing, Drew?
None of them.
All right, there you go. So. And don't try to message him because he won't.
It doesn't.
He'd be like, who's White Genocide 666? I don't want to talk to this person.
I recently friended Ron. He's a friend on the Xbox
now. Oh, yeah, he's a video gamer. Yeah, sure. He's a gamer, mm-hmm. as they like to call them. Yeah. A gamer?
He's a gamer.
Hi-yo!
Yeah. Oddly appropriate.
Oh, shit. I'm going to stop and I restart it. We love Ron. Ron's awesome. Actually, we have an email from him from the Vox Populi. It's actually his Hurricane Irma email that he sent us. But, I was just editing the episode when he sent it. I was like, oh, buddy, we're going to have to read it in the next episode as long as the Crespediso Cito doesn't get washed away in the storm. But we're back. We're here. We're going to do the Vox Populi in a couple minutes. But first, hit me up on Twitter. I am Chris Crespo. Go to pftmedia.com. We are on the PFT Radio Network, and we have all sorts of shows. And due to the storm, those shows have all been on hiatus for a week. But we will be back on schedule this week, so expect soon new episodes of Orlando Opinions, the Simon Time Trivia Show, The Devil's in the Details, Pounding the Gap, Poking the Bear should be back online this week. What's the Fuss is up right now? It keeps going. Scotch and Good Conversation. God bless Peter Von Taborski. Actually, he was the one to give us content. Him and Billy D.
Yeah.
Billy D's Postmortem. I wrote that down. Billy D's Postmortem. Go to YouTube. If you search Billy D's Postmortem, it pops right up. Or if you go to PFT Media,
and click on PFTV right there on the top. You'll see all his videos right there curated for you. Start from the beginning. You can see his, out of his top 100 movies, you can see 100 through 75, through 70, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, guys, check it out, because episode 7, by the time you're hearing this, episode 7 will about to be out, if not out already. Mm-hmm. Billy D's the man. We love him. He's our New York City senior correspondent, horror film aficionado. We'll be starting Billy D's Death in Movies in just a second, but PFT Media, shout out to Peter Von Zaborski, who fled the state because of Hurricane Irma, but wisely had an episode ready to go and scheduled to publish on Friday. God bless him. Check out Scott's smart A Good man. Conversation. He's a very smart man. We love him. He's awesome. Where's my thing? Was there another? I did that. Email us, cinemacrespediso@gmail.com for stickers. Woo! There's that button. Son of a bitch. All right, let's see. What did I say? I said we're going to do Billy D. Let's go ahead and do that old Billy D's other movie.
Oh, this is heavy. There's that word again. Heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is there a problem with the Earth's gravitational pull? What?
Ow! You're metal, dude! We're totally going to kill you now.
That's right. Billy D is our man. He's our homie. He is our soon-to-be ineligible bachelor. Is that how you would say that? I have no idea.
Sure. I guess. I mean, that's one way of saying it.
That's one way of saying it. He found his Amal Clooney. What was her name before she got married? God damn it. You know what's funny about the George Clooney-Amal Clooney relationship? In that relationship, he's the bimbo.
Yes. Yes. He is the dumb slut.
He's the dumb face.
Yes.
He's the trophy husband.
He is.
Amal's like, look what I got. That's awesome. Good for her. Landed a real whale of a catch there. Billy D's the man. He's our man. Check out Billy D's postmortem. And here comes Drew with Billy D's Death of the Movies.
What is up, my dudes?
What's up, Billy?
While you were all hunkered down last week,
so
I
hunkered.
Saw it at the Alamo Draft House.
But what did he see, though? He has to let us know.
It.
Yeah, but what's the movie, though?
It.
Okay, we're not going to do this game.
I got tickets for the late afternoon showing so I could be exiting as the all-clown screening was lining
did
up.
Did you see these pictures?
I did.
Billy D is a great photographer. Yes. What's the name of his Facebook page? Billy D takes pictures. You can see that. I think you see him on there or on Instagram, I Love Blood. Great pictures of a bunch of clowns waiting to get into this dark theater.
Total success, but it. Let's talk about It and Stephen King in general.
Okay.
King is one of my favorite authors of all time.
Okay.
Jumping into a Stephen King book is like putting on a comfy hoodie, and my introduction to Stephen King were the TV event miniseries of the early 90s.
All right.
These were great for TV, considering the time.
Yeah.
They don't really hold up, though.
No.
And that makes them perfect for updating with new adaptations.
Yes.
Stephen King's stories felt hobbled by what you can do on TV, even though they were able to get away with an incredible amount for the time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The TV movies led me to the books, which I devoured from my tweens into my 20s. I've read a stupid amount of Stephen King books. Most of them only once.
Me too. That's a funny thing he says that. I love Stephen King. I've read a ton of his stuff outside of The Dark Tower. I don't think I reread a single thing. Maybe Desperation and Regulators.
With the disappointment still lingering in my heart from The Dark Tower, I saw It, and I really liked it. It gave me the warm hoodie feeling.
Hmm.
The Amblin type kids, the broad daylight horror, mm-hmm. Pennywise, mm-hmm. It was all there.
Yeah.
It didn't matter it was the 80s. It didn't matter that it was the 80s.
Because it's updated from the 50s.
Yes. In fact, I'm glad it wasn't in the 50s, since I don't know if you remember, but there are a surprising amount of N-bombs in the TV miniseries and book.
I do not.
Watched it recently, can confirm Henry Bowers calls Mike Hanlon a hard R N-word on several occasions.
Jesus.
And he, like, really says it.
Why? What's the point?
I know,
oh, man, it's
right?
Weird. So that was what Billy said.
Yeah.
God damn it.
So they made it 80s and traded the N-word for the other F-word, which I guess that's a fair trade.
Hashtag
progress.
When he called him a faggot one time.
Yeah.
And then when he said that, in the exact moment when he said faggot, I was like, but then I was like, but you know, it's the 80s. I did take into account the time period that the movie was in, and the kids are kind of, it was kind of a shitty kid anyway. Yeah. But I did have an immediate like recoil reaction though. Just a visceral. I can't imagine if they were using the N-word though. Man, good on you, Billy, for pointing that up.
I think it works because I was a young kid when I saw It, with the 90s just ahead of me. Seeing this version set during a time so close to when I grew up, the kids doing the same bullshit we used to do really helped tap into the nature of my own childhood fears.
Huh.
Pennywise used childhood fears. It was super effective.
Yeah.
Bill Skarsgård was great as Pennywise,
yep.
And his very otherworldly and an accurate cosmic approximation of a human, and Finn Wolfhard is just the best.
Yeah.
See It. Get scared, have fun, stay cool, Billy D.
Thanks, Billy. I agree with all that. It's cool that he liked it as much as he did, because I remember when the trailer came out, he wasn't impressed with the trailer.
Correct.
Everyone was like, I remember when the It trailer came out, and actually, we should have seen the monster opening based on this factoid. When the It trailer came out and debuted online, it broke one of those like most viewed trailers YouTube records or whatever. People flipped out for that initial trailer. And I thought it was effective marketing. Not necessarily that great, but pretty good. I've seen better.
Yeah.
I've also seen much, much worse.
Every day.
Yeah. And Billy D wasn't that impressed.
No.
So I think it's a testament to the movie itself that it overcame that and it overcame his horror pedigree to be like, no, this is actually quite good.
It is.
It's actually quite good.
I agree.
So It Chapter 2, I think we're all on board, right? We're all on board 100%. Collectively. Looking forward to it. All right. Bill, thank you so much. Everyone hit him up all over the internet at I Love Blood. All right, let's do this.
That moment you've all been waiting for, the world famous
Vox Populi. Populi.
Hit us up, cinemacrespediso@gmail.com. We will read your reviews on the show. Drew, take it away.
We got an email from Ron.
What's up?
Ron
from last week.
Entitled, Y'all Be Safe.
Oh, man, we tried. Oh, shit.
Juice the Kyber first of all.
Drew, I got a game here that I slapped together quickly today, and it's an easy one, I think. It's called You're 17-11.
Okay.
A respectable record. You're doing well. This week's game is called The Natural Disasters.
Okay.
There was a wrestling tag team in the late 80s, early 90s in WWF called The Natural Disasters. Remember Earthquake the Wrestler? Because you weren't watching wrestling when you were a kid, right?
Yeah.
Big fat guy wore a blue unitard. His finishing move was he would bounce. The guy would be on the ground. He'd bounce against the ropes running. And then he'd like, quote, jump and sit on the guy on his chest. And then while sitting on him, the ref would pin 1, 2, 3. I think Hulk Hogan's the only person to ever kick out of that because racism gives you the strength to beat earthquakes.
Yes.
There was another wrestler called Tugboat, big old fat guy.
Okay.
They repackaged him as Typhoon.
Oh, there we go.
Hurricane and Typhoon, the natural disasters. Mm. Shout out to Simon Time because he's our wrestling buddy now. We know a wrestler. I love that I finally know a wrestler. Shout out to Lee Daintree because he likes wrestling too, and he was on our show recently. The Natural Disasters, Drew. I'm going to give you a very simplified, very dumb description of a movie. You tell me the name of the movie.
Okay.
And they're all natural disaster movies to a degree. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Number one, Pierce Brosnan battles a volcano.
Oh, God damn it. Dante's Peak.
Correct. Number two, Tommy Lee Jones battles a volcano.
Oh, damn it. Which one was that one? It was Dante's Peak and the other one. Fuck.
People are screaming at their phones now.
Is it just Volcano?
Yes, it's just Volcano. It's just Volcano. Number three. I should have put those. Number three. President Morgan Freeman loses to a meteor.
Armageddon.
No, that's Deep Impact.
Oh.
Number four. Bruce Willis defeats
Armageddon.
A meteor.
That's Armageddon.
Number five, George Clooney and Mark Wahlberg lose to a storm.
The perfect storm.
Correct.
Or is it a perfect storm?
The perfect storm.
Okay.
It's the perfect storm. Now called Superstorm Sandy. Number six, Matt Damon battles a virus. I did try to make him a little harder.
Matt Damon
battles a virus.
Battles a virus?
Uh,
This one's eluding me.
Contagion.
Oh, that was Matt Damon, wasn't it?
Number 7, Dustin Hoffman battles a virus.
I know this one. Fuck. It's got that stupid spider monkey.
On the box art.
Yes, that's
what I'm saying. Dustin Hoffman, Rene Russo, I think Morgan Freeman again.
Yeah, I think Morgan Freeman again. God. Oh, what was the name of that stupid fucking Outbreak.
Correct. Well done. Number 8, Bill Paxton chases tornadoes.
Twister.
Correct. Number 9, Seth Rogen battles the apocalypse.
What was the fucking name of that goddamn movie? I forget the name of that fucking movie.
The Green Hornet.
No.
This is the end.
There we go.
And finally, number 10, Clive Owen battles worldwide apathy.
Children of Men.
Children of Men. You got, looks like you got 7 out of 10, 8 out of 10?
Yeah.
You got it 7 out of 10.
Something like that.
Well done.
It was all right. What's next? Whatever.
Back to the Vox Populi.
So Ron's email.
What's up, Ron?
So first I saw What Happened to Monday on Netflix.
What Happened to Monday?
Okay. That was a fun ride. After the ending of Orphan Black, this movie kind of captured nurture versus nature feel. You have a dystopia where rats from Brazil are good food and siblings are outlawed. So when seven sisters are hiding out, sharing one identity, you epically determine their fate.
Huh.
With Glenn Close and Willem Dafoe being their awesome selves,
cool.
I do recommend this even if you find out the motivation of betrayal beginning of the third act.
Okay. I like Willem Dafoe. I like Glenn Close. And something about Brazil? What do you say, Brazil?
Rats from Brazil.
Our good food.
And siblings are outlawed.
What? That sounds weird. Mm-hmm. What happened on Monday? That just sounds strange as fuck.
Then there's It.
It. All right, here. Oh.
I loved it. Seeing It with a full theater was fun. Richie was a hit with his one-liners. Some jump scares got the teenager behind me to spill ice on me. All the kids did well. My only complaint is no slingshot, no showing of racist Bowers, and no gangbang at the end.
You wanted the child gangbang, Ron?
I hope chapter 2 gets greenlit. Well, Chris, I hope you and the Kempt Klempto and Kindred Drew be safe. I treasure you both and hope these storms treat you well. Ron.
Thanks, Ron. I appreciate it. You see Ron put on our Facebook group. Go to Facebook and join our Cinema Presbyteso Facebook group.
Yes. Yes.
He wants fan art of the fanfic that he's writing of us.
Yeah, well, I mean, did you see Cremella's first introduction to the fanfiction?
Cremella wrote some fanfiction. Cremella! Encourage him!
Oh, yeah, no, it's getting bad, Chris. I'm not sure if you've been keeping up to date with that link, but it's...
No, I haven't been keeping up to date, as a matter of fact. I didn't keep up with it.
It got weird.
That's cool.
It got really weird really quick.
That's fine, it can get weird. I gotta say... kind of flattered. Thanks, Ron. You're awesome.
All right, we got an email from Scott.
What's up, Scott? Scott's our homie.
He's got an It and Mother review.
Awesome. All right.
So It. Hashtag it's a hit.
Yeah!
Drew's right. That's the stupidest thing I've heard today.
God damn it!
He knows what I'm going to say before I even say it.
And then sometimes my bunghole goes...
I sure as fuck never read the 1,000-page book. I never saw the TV movie, though I have memories of Tim Curry in the clown getup, so there's that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just not a horror guy. Sorry, Billy D. I liked It.
Okay.
But I'm not sure if I'll ever watch It again.
Fair enough.
The kids were all great, and Pennywise was awesome.
Yeah.
Hell, every one of the horror scenes depicted were so creepy, so cool. I really liked how every sequence felt unique.
Mm-hmm.
Pennywise seldom did the same thing twice, but when he did, it always came from a different angle. Kept me on my toes throughout. It's just not my thing is all, but I'm down for chapter 2. 3 stars.
Awesome. Okay, very good. Appreciate that. And then there's Mother review.
Mother. My favorite thing about Darren Aronofsky is walking out of the theater wondering 2 things. 1, what the fuck was that?
Mm-hmm.
And 2, how soon can I see that again so I can confirm whether I love it or hate it? Sure enough, walking out of Mother, a confused couple who I've never met before asked me, "So, did you get it?" I responded, "I think so. I think he was God. Then I watched.
Whoa, spoiler!
Then I watched their eyes go wide as if I'd blown their minds. And I like to think that they went straight back to the box office to purchase a second viewing. And hell, I don't even know if I'm right. I fucking loved this movie, and I also totally get why audiences will hate it.
Yeah.
It's the craziest, most absurd film I've seen in God, I can't remember how long. Mm-hmm. It makes little to no sense, and to call the so-called resolution ambiguous is a kindness, but nevertheless, I really dug it. I'm going to have to disagree.
Yeah, we're going to have to disagree, but you know what? We'll be disagreeing on our spoiler episode, Scott, so go ahead and look forward to listening to that. To hear what we got to think. I think, again, like I said, it's... I'm trying not to conflate my contempt for people,
mm-hmm.
especially in groups,
mm-hmm.
with just, like, approaching art in a certain way.
Yeah.
We emphasized it already. You really have to go in not expecting a literal story and be ready to dissect symbolism. And if you're not up to the task, or even not even feeling like it, then this movie's gonna bounce right off your Kevlar.
Mm-hmm.
So, but then again, you know, it's Aronofsky, but even for Aronofsky, this is by far his most allegorical film since Pi.
Yeah.
And even Pi is still pretty straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a major leap forward for him as a filmmaker, and it requires a leap forward from us as consumers of this type of media to fully understand what's going on. It's a lot like Shane Carruth. I wouldn't mm-hmm. be surprised if Aronofsky got a little inspiration
from
Upstream Color.
I'm sure.
And that at no point in this movie, except for maybe at the very end, there's a bit of a cop-out at the end to this, but at no point else in the movie does anyone explain what's going on.
No.
Never does one character say to another, this is happening.
No.
That's exposition. No. This movie is devoid of exposition. I love those kind of movies
mm-hmm.
because they're so rare, because they require an audience to like be an active participant. This movie is not spoon feeding you. You are going to be into this and you're going to watch it. It's definitely worth a second watch if you're into it. If you watch it, you think it's trash, you don't want to watch it again, don't watch it again. But then when you're upset that they made a fourth Spider-Man in 15 years, don't bitch about it. Do not bitch about it when you reject something original.
My only critique, as terrific as Ed Harris, Michelle Pfeiffer, and Domhnall Gleeson all were, mm-hmm. and even Kristen Wiig.
Yeah, Kristen Wiig shows up.
I wish none of them were in this film. I wish their roles, as with the rest of the cast, had gone to more anonymous actors. Because, as I see it, the film is about Lawrence and Bardem. They're the stars. They're the story. Having this other star power lying around, as great as it was, it detracts from them. They were everything. 3.5 stars.
Sure. You know what? Remember that Archie's Final Project movie?
Mm-hmm.
I felt the same thing with that movie, where it was such a visceral, and just in term, in a different way, but it was such a raw feeling movie. Like, this feels real. Even though it's a movie, it feels real. When the main character's parents show up and they're played by like SNL alumni.
No.
It's like, whoa, this is jarring. Because now all of a sudden I recognize these actors. I could concede to that point. Absolutely, 100%.
P.S.
Uh-oh.
These two films have inspired me to watch a couple of companion pieces that
Ooh.
I've ignored too long.
Ooh.
On Twitter, Pennywise has been gay-linked to the Babadook.
That's funny. Yeah. That's cute.
So I guess I need to watch the Babadook. I've been negligent. It's on Netflix, and I'm gonna do it.
Yeah, dude, it's good.
And Aronofsky, fuck. I've still never seen Requiem for a Dream. It's entirely my fault. It's on Netflix. I'm gonna do it. PPS. My Netflix clue is my own personal purgatory. I'll never finish it. Take care, guys. Scott. Oh, the Babadook and Requiem. That's
a fucked up double feature.
Ugh.
If you have mother issues, do not watch those two movies for different reasons.
Oh.
Man, watch Requiem. Watch it. You gotta watch it at least once.
I mean, you do. Yeah.
There's also an R-rated version and an NC-17 version.
I mean, it's almost like a rite of passage.
If you really, really like movies, it kind of is.
Yeah.
It's
like
one of those movies.
You have to cross that boundary so you can break through and go on to this whole other weird universe of fucked up bullshit.
Yeah. It helps. All right. Hey, Scott, thanks a lot, buddy. We appreciate it. Anything else from the emails?
No, that's it.
I'm going through our Facebook group. I know someone posted a... oh, man, my battery's dying super fast. Someone posted a mother review to our Facebook group. I posted this to the Facebook group. I saw this on Twitter. Anthony Jeselnik.
I saw that.
Wish I'd known about the audience hatred towards Mother before I saw it. Would have enjoyed it more. Astonished was even attempted. I love Anthony Jeselnik. He's great.
Yeah, well, he fucking gets it.
Also, rest in power, Harry Dean Stanton. Mm. But he was 91 years old, so, I mean...
Like, you didn't see that coming.
It's not a tragedy.
I mean, it
you
is.
Can, you can be... No, it's not. You can be sad no, about it. He lived a very long, very productive life. He died of natural causes.
Him dying is not the tragedy. The fact that he's not going to be gracing us with anything else is the tragedy.
I guess so. I love Harry Dean Stanton, but it's not like he was all that good in anything in the last 10, 15 years. Like, he popped up in the Avengers for 2 minutes.
That was weird.
Yeah, right? Like, oh, this is supposed to be great. It's just Harry Dean Stanton.
Oh, it was just weird.
Anyway.
He didn't belong in that movie.
Just rewatch Alien. Watch him get eaten again. Actually, you don't even see him getting eaten. He just looks up, and then you hear him scream, and then it's a close-up of the cat. And the cat's like, oh, shit. Now I'm just going through the thing, and I can't find it. Someone, I think it was on this. I don't know why I can't find it. Someone posted a really nice review of Mother on our group. Join the Cinema Crust Media Facebook group so you can see that. All right, so that's it for the Vox Populi. Awesome, awesome. Let's do that movie news.
Check out Justin Timberlake and Jessica Biel showing off their hot beach bods during
and
their romantic Caribbean getaway.
Opens up about navigating the holidays with ex-wife Reese Witherspoon.
Leia is spilling the beans about a secret Star Wars affair. Apparently Han wasn't so solo after all.
He has been melting down. He's been berating fans, walking off stage. So what's going on with the beads?
That's right, celebrity movie news. That's what we do here at Cinema Crespity. So people are getting divorced. Did you know? Celebrity beach bods. Will we see them anymore? Falls upon us. But first off, what's up with the Biebs? Drew, did you know Justin Bieber and Marilyn Manson are having the weirdest feud ever?
Yes, I did.
You did know that?
Mm-hmm. I saw that today on something. I forget how.
Yeah, they're feuding.
Yeah, good for them.
Good for them. Good for them. Have you seen pictures of Marilyn Manson lately?
No.
His transformation into Nick Cage is almost complete.
Seriously?
He's starting to look like him. It's really strange. It's the strangest thing. Okay, guys. Oh, shit. I closed this, but I was supposed to pull up the movie news segment.
Yeah.
I'm down to 3% battery, so we're going to have to really crank through this and then just end this thing. Jim Carrey is going to be on a Showtime series.
Cool.
In which he plays a host of a kid's show.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got to be happy-go-lucky, blah, blah, blah. It actually plays into his manic, because he's a...
Manic depressive.
Long documented.
Makes sense.
Bipolar.
Yeah.
He's a children's host. He's got to be happy. Then he goes to his home life, and his home life is falling apart.
Yeah.
His family, everything's going terrible. So he's going to be in a TV show. It's a Showtime show. And it's his first TV show since In Living Color.
Oh, that reminds me. Oh, God, what was... God damn, Edward Norton and fucking...
Death to Smoochie.
Yes!
Death to Smoochie is an interesting parallel because it's the underbelly of children's TV satire. Yeah. And that's all fun. I haven't seen that movie in a while.
It's a fun movie, dude. Robin Williams is nuts in that movie.
Yeah, Robin Williams is crazy. Directed by Danny DeVito. Ed Norton is a lot of fun in it. It's a fun movie. I remember seeing that in theaters with our homie, Ron B. Long.
Let me tangle what?
John Wick, Chapter 2. Made over $171 million this past February. The first John Wick also made a bunch of money in October of 2014. John Wick 3 has a release date.
Yes, we're getting more.
May
17, 2019. Oh, damn, they're going in with the big boys.
Yes, isn't that crazy?
John Wick's made it to the big-time summer blockbuster.
May 3rd, 2019 is Avengers 4.
Like I said.
Following a week behind, so the week before John Wick 3, that live-action Aladdin remake, and the Minecraft movie. And then John Wick comes out the week after. I don't know what Lionsgate's thinking. What's Lionsgate's thinking?
Wow.
That was a hard sentence to say. What is Lionsgate stinking? Because that is, they should have stuck to the...
Off-season
weird stuff. Off-season, fall, or winter release date.
Nope.
Like you said, they want to play with the big boys.
Those big boys.
I love John Wick.
But
you know what? It's also the third series, right? Typically, these things are in trilogies, so it's going to be the final one. It's not like if this movie underperforms for a, quote, summer movie, we're not going to get John Wick 4. No. I don't expect John Wick 4.
No.
So they could release it whenever.
I mean, I couldn't believe... I was happy enough to get John Wick 2. Just hearing John Wick 3, just... Whoo!
Well, I mean, they definitely left the open at the end.
So well, like, yeah, but still, you never... You never know what's going to happen.
Overall, there could be regime changes at studios. Plenty of reasons why sequels could never get made. But May 2019, it's happening.
Sweet.
So we're
I'm down.
Almost 2 years away from the next John Wick. And finally, James Cameron is executive producing a TV show based on his movie True Lies.
Okay.
It looks like it's going to be done on Fox. Well, it's being produced by 20th Century Fox, which means it could end up on FX.
Mm-hmm.
McGee will direct the pilot. McGee has a James Cameron connection as he directed Terminator Salvation.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, Cameron is going to executive produce it. And just like the movie, the TV show will be about a wife who finds out her husband is a spy.
Yeah.
And they got to deal with all that shit. It's funny how often they do that. Successful movie gets turned into a TV show and vice versa. They will borrow from each other to make things happen.
Yeah.
I have no interest whatsoever. But who knows? Maybe it'll be good.
You know, it all depends on who they get to play the leads.
It is. It is about the actors, and McG is a competent director. I mean, he's not terrible, but doesn't have that grace, I think.
Yeah.
And while he, just like many other people out there, while he could be a decent enough visual director with some good ideas, mm-hmm. he can't decipher what is a good or bad script to save him.
I mean,
save his life.
He's not going to be making Mother anytime soon.
He ain't making no Mothers anytime soon, that's for sure. That's for sure. All right. Let's wrap this thing up. Drew, thank you.
You're very welcome.
Thank you everyone for downloading and listening. We appreciate it. We'll be back. We're doing our Mother bonus episode tomorrow. So look for that very soon. And then we'll be doing hopefully a bonus episode sometime this week. We'll be back next week with a guest. Things are finally back to normal here around the Crespedista studio. In
getting
the meantime,
there.
We're getting there. We're finally getting there. I mean, we're at 78.8 degrees.
All right.
We're getting there. So, thank you, everyone. We really appreciate it. Please rate us and review us on iTunes if you like the show, because that'll help us out a lot. And check out everything else on pftmedia.com. Break up the big banks. Read more books. Be excellent to each other. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. And the NFL is fucking trash. Come at me, bro. Right? That's a come at me, bro situation.
Come at me, bro.
Cash me outside.
I don't understand that.
Good. You shouldn't.
I don't even know what it means.
Good. That means you're above the fray. I'm adding that. Break up the big banks. Be excellent to each other. Free Mumia Abu-Jamal. Read more books. Did I say that already? Fuck the NFL. It is pure trash. Be above the fray. Peace out.
A PFT Media production.